Welcome to Pediatric Dentistry from A to T, the podcast that covers all aspects of pediatric dentistry, clinical, business, wellness for dentists, and leading-edge science. It's all right here. And now your host, Dr. Jared Johnson.
Welcome back. This is our third episode. If you did not catch our last two episodes, we have Edge Advise here. We have CPAs Jack and Marshall on, and they have just been wonderful to chat with. So if you are catching this and you want to go back, those might be something you want to go back and listen to, because there's a lot of information in those about becoming a partner and or becoming an owner and the things that you should be looking for from a dental standpoint and then also a financial standpoint. So again, thanks for coming back on the show, Jack and Marshall.
Thanks for having us back.
The first two couldn't have been that bad then.
Yeah. So you bought a practice. Now what? So we just spent all this money. We created our team. We bought an office. And now it's our responsibility to run everything. And this is it's a fun challenge. I can tell you, I built a practice. And I can tell you, it's a wonderful and rewarding experience to grow something to just an amazing practice. I love to work there every day, but you're going to have challenges along the way, and there's going to be things that you're going to have to learn. And I would encourage anyone that bought an office or to learn everything that your office needs to do, and then you can pass it off is the route I took. And you'll make some mistakes and learn from those. But what are some things that we're going to have to look out for? Let's start with, you got a payroll, you got to pay people, right? So what are some things that we need to look out for as far as, I mean, you got to pay taxes, there's a ton of stuff, right?
There is. And I think you hit it on the head, is payroll is kind of the biggest one right out of the gates. And everybody wants to make sure that their people get paid on time. If you don't, you're going to hear about it. But kind of on the flip side of that, running payroll doesn't sound that bad. I think a lot of people don't realize all the different things that go into running payroll accurately and effectively throughout a year. There's unemployment, there's payroll tax, there's federal and state taxes to be concerned with, workers' comp. There is a ton of things. And that's even before you start adding in deductions for 401ks and
health insurance,
right? So that's a very fluid one. Payroll changes for a lot of people as they evolve as a practice. And so the number one comment that I hear from new buyers and people that are looking at, what's the best way to go about this, right? And I know, Jared, you said you kind of did it yourself, right? That's one route. The other route is to rely on that team that you had built before, where, hey, I went to school to be a dentist, I know how to do root canals and bridges and that kind of stuff. They didn't teach me a whole hell of a lot about payroll tax, right? So I'm going to lean on my CPA to kind of perform that function for me. So, you know, there are two routes there. And neither one's wrong, right? Even as a CPA that handles payroll, that's a big piece of what we do. We have some that do it themselves, and that's completely fine. I wouldn't say you need to have a CPA do it, but is it nice to take that off your plate so you can focus on some of these other aspects of your business as you get it going and growing and those sorts of things? Yes, because the most profitable a dentist is going to be is when he's chairside, not sitting in front of QuickBooks Online, figuring out how to delete an old payroll and make sure everything's up to snuff there.
Yeah, I would say for listeners, there's, like Jack said, there's different ways you can do this. You can hand this off to your CPA. I still punch in the hours myself and do the payroll, but I didn't. The CPA set that up. I didn't set all that up. So it's not like, once you get to that point, it takes me 5 minutes to punch in their hours and their vacation, their overtime, and then it goes. And then QuickBooks is really nice. I know there are other companies, but the federal tax and state tax are automatically withdrawn and deposited, and that's all reported. I don't log into the state or the IRS website and report those. I used to have to do that, and that was a pain in the butt. So your CPA can definitely help set that up, and you should be able to lean on them for that. One other thing that's really, I think, important, we talked, I think, about in episode one about human relations and having someone to be able to rely on to deal with your team. And you're going to come into, you wouldn't imagine some of the things, if you haven't listened to Paul Edwards on his podcast with Cedar, some of the things that they get calls on, you wouldn't imagine some of the challenges that you're going to face with HR, like stuff you can't even dream up, and you're going to need to have a company. So at my office, we use Cedar. They consult. It takes a little bit of time for them to get back to you, but you submit a ticket and the information that is going on with your team, and they'll be able to get back to you with some verbiage on what to say and how to manage the situation, because that's all they do. They've seen all these situations pan out, and they can't guarantee that you're going to be safe and protected, but because they're not the one having the conversation. But that's another route that a lot of people have gone, and it's, I think, for the price you pay, I think I pay $129 a month, that is worth every penny. And I don't use them every month, but when you do use them, it is definitely a cost savings versus talking to an attorney. So are there any other services that you see that owners need to get connected with?
Yeah, I mean, again, I think some of it depends on the office, right? And I know we touched on this a little bit, Jared, and you said, well, you might need a plumber. And there's all those, right? For HR, you may use someone like Cedar. You may use your attorney to review employment agreements. Cedar would probably be a good company to work on a handbook if you want to have a handbook and you want to actually have those policies and procedures written down and in place so that they can be followed. So just kind of really expanding on building the team, but then expanding on that to anything that's needed in the office as you go through. And, another example could be if you buy that practice and you want to grow it, right? Do you now need to make a connection with a recruiter because you might need an associate? So there's different paths for every different practice owner out there on how they're going to run their practice, expand their practice, grow their practice. There's probably an equipment rep or four that'll be knocking on your door day one, trying to sell you all types of neat tools that for your office. So a lot of different connections to make.
Yeah, I think we'll see what happens with the dental reps. I think things have changed a little bit. We don't have as many come through my office as we used to. I don't know if that's something that's a workforce challenge right now, or if it's just something that the companies are kind of getting away from with some of these other companies that are online that are actually reputable as well. I will say that one of the things you mentioned about equipment, just a little tip is you don't have to, if when you buy your office, you don't have to go out and buy new equipment. You can actually buy decent used equipment online, like a company like Atlas Resale, or you can even buy stuff from like Patterson and Shine. That's like a showroom equipment at a discounted rate. So when you're looking at replacing something, don't just think you have to go pay that top price, because if you sit and watch and wait and look at, let's say you want to get another autoclave, a second one. I think you should have two, because if one goes down, you're done for the day. You get in your second autoclave, go look for one that has a low cycle count of the brand you want that's used. It may take you a while to find it, but you're definitely going to get a lot more cost effective than paying that dealer price. So I wouldn't do that necessarily for everything, but just some of those bigger purchases you may want to look in for that. Or even if you're growing a practice, I think on Atlas Resale right now, there's some nice four operatory chairs for, I think it's like $12,000. Like, that's a steal. You can't get one chair for that. So that may be something if you're looking to expand locations, another way to be a little more cost effective than purchasing new. Not that new is awful, but cost effective is nice to be as well. How would we go about, like you just mentioned, bringing an associate in? So let's say you bought the office, you figured out all the payroll, all the HR, and you want to, where do you start with finding the right person to come in and either be an associate or be in a partner or help you maybe open another location?
So the first thing I usually look at is, are we bringing the associate in because we're too busy, or because we just want to work less, right? And meaning you got to understand the metrics of the practice. If we've got a practice that just has 1400 patients in it and we're like, well, I only want to work 2 days a week, that's a different associate than a practice that has 2500 patients. And, you know, you can't get in to see hygiene for 8 months and the doctors are booked out 4 weeks. You know, that those are different type of what are we looking for in an associate type of transaction. So I would say first, understanding yourself and understanding what we're trying to do here. What I always like to do from an associate perspective is get up, use those connections you already have, right? You go to your local meetings, maybe, or maybe there's a Seattle study club, or, you know, check back at the universities. That's a phone call that you went to get your dental licensing to see who's there, where they want to move to. You know, you could go to the vendor fair there. We have people that some of our practices that are always looking for associates go to vendor fairs just to try and find other people that want to move to their community. So I think always trying to use the resources that you have at hand first is going to be the most cost effective. And you're also getting a referral from someone that you trust, right? So there's a lot to that, right? If someone's bringing in an associate. And, you know, I guess outside of that, if you kind of exhaust those opportunities, then you need to kind of go to the professional recruiting world and find use a recruiter to help you find an associate. So they're kind of the two ways that we see people going about it. And then you know, recruiters, like we have recruiting here at Edge. It's one of the services we offer. The recruiters will ask you what you're looking for, right? What type of services, what type of experience are you, you know, willing to mentor, which is becoming more of a focus, which I think is great, right? And in associates coming in, what will they be in their own location? Will you share locations? How many assistants will they get? What type of insurance contracts are you in? Those are questions that are more relevant today than they were 10 years ago. So that's kind of what the recruiter should be asking you to make sure that they get the right person in your practice.
What do you think is the critical, I guess, number of patients or critical number of weeks you're booked out before you can? I mean, obviously there's two ways to do it. Let's say you're wanting to work less. Well, there's another way to do it. You just drop insurance, right?
Right. And
people are probably
that's starting to happen.
It is.
Yeah.
Not going to come. I mean, to be honest, I mean, I've got a problem in my office. I'd love to have someone come work for me, but I mean, we're booked out till December and we got a lot of unhappy people when you can't get in to see your dentist for 3 months. So I'm working through those challenges right now, but what's the number, I guess, if you had to say a healthy number that would be able to support an associate, is there a point at which you see that you have that conversation, you say, well, you don't have enough patience for this?
Yeah. Good question. In like a GP practice, I would say we're looking at anywhere between 1500 to 2000 active patients is going to be like a full practice for one dentist. And again, some of that depends on procedure mix, what you're keeping in-house versus what you're referring out. And then as far as like a booked out, once you're getting to like 4 to 6 weeks where someone can't get in, you know, for a simple procedure in the next month, month and a half, I think you're running the risk of starting to lose those patients. And especially if they have pain, they're going to go look somewhere else. So those are kind of the high level doctor metrics we're looking at there. And I think most GP practices block new patients for hygiene. And then they'll usually kind of open those up within, you know, a week or two of them coming up if they're not filled. But, you know, from a patient perspective, there's two things. It's like the bathtub, right? There's water coming in and there's the drain going out. So as long as we have water coming in, and the drain is, you know, reasonably shut in your practice, if you're getting, you know, 20 to 30 new patients a month and that's not slowing down and you're booked out 6 weeks, hygiene, it's really tough to get into. You're filling all those new patient slots. And you want to grow, right? It's probably time to start taking a look.
Yeah, I think what you just hit on there is that what you said is actually true. They're going to go somewhere else. It's happening right now to me. I can tell you, people call and I can't come in. They're going to the pediatric dentist in the next town. It's happening. So we're working on dropping insurance. Obviously, that takes 90 days. So we did that a few weeks ago, and about a month from now, we'll be maybe in a better spot, but we'll see if that even helps us out at all. But yeah. I think those metrics, I think, are something that you want to consider, and it can be a challenge to decide. And it's also, you know, it can make people nervous bringing on someone else if you're just the solo doc and now you've got someone else that's in there and they may have a different personality, and that's got to fit with your whole dental team. And one of the other challenges right now, I will tell both of you, is if I bring someone else in to work with me, I got to hire more dental assistants.
Yep.
More staff.
That's what you can't hire right now.
Anybody.
Right. Anybody.
Dental
right.
assistants.
Yeah.
So I know there's some things going through Congress with the ADA. I don't know how much that will help us, but there are some things going through there. And I know some things are going through at different state association levels to try to help with dental boards and getting our workforce issues addressed. But those are some things to consider. And talk a little bit more about, you mentioned people want a mentorship. What does that relationship look like? That's interesting to me that you mentioned that.
Yeah, actually, I for the first time, associate started July 1, but when we were working on her contract with one of my clients, she put in the contract that she wanted 30 minutes of scheduled mentor time. I think it was weekly. And, you know, it's scary, right? Going into private practice and doing it yourself. And those are challenges or potential challenges. And I think what we're seeing in, you know, in some of the dental schools is you're actually doing more education like type work, less hands-on type work as these schools progress, right? So you may come out of school, you know, doing one root canal and assisting on three potentially. But, you know, if it were 15, 20 years ago, you may have had to do 10 yourself, right? So your actual confidence level and your hand skills maybe aren't where they, I don't know where they need to be. So, and I don't think that dentistry is different than any other career. And I can speak to that in the CPA world. Marshall, coming out of college, right, learned more in his first year of practice from the people around him than he learned for 4 years in college, right? And so I don't think that's any different, most likely, in a lot of professions across the board. So, you know, just having the people that are supporting you and the people that are wrapping their arms around you and, you know, the people that are teaching you on what to look at this x-ray versus, you know, what you might be seeing here versus what you might be seeing there. And I'm sure every dentist has a little bit different hand technique when it comes to extracting a tooth. And maybe that's something that was never taught. That was something that was learned. And those little tidbits that they can be passed along, I think provide a lot to associates that are coming out. So that, I think that, you know, that's the clinical side, right? And then if you're in a partnership, there's the whole business side, which we touched on earlier. And mentorship in the business side is you know, probably equally as important to having a successful business as the mentorship on the clinical side.
Let's dive into the business side a little bit. You're going to have some things that you're probably going to want to track financially with different statements and numbers at your office. What are some common things that you see your clients tracking monthly as far as, I mean, you're going to have production, you're going to have collections, you're going to have adjustments, you're going to have your aging report, you're going to have your collection ratio, all these things. What are some things that you're seeing that you recommend your clients track?
Yeah, we do a lot of mile high stuff here as well when it comes to metric tracking and those sorts of things. So cash flow, right? I mean, that's one that I always like to
talk about. Again, QuickBooks has a really nice report for that. Profitability, right? I mean, is going to be the other one. Let's get on to the profit and loss statement and let's take a look at the money coming in and coming out, right? Because that's the ultimate indicator of how we're doing. And I think that's one of the biggest questions we get is, how am I doing, right? And so the way that we typically answer that question, how we're doing, is, you know, let's look at overhead percentages. Let's look at how much you're spending on supplies. Let's look at, you know, occupancy expenses, right? And total cash flow down to you. So I think those are the things that we help you look at as well, and things that each doctor should take a look at. Like you said, either quarterly, monthly, biannually, I mean, however you feel comfortable with it. We have people that kind of do it at all those different time intervals. I don't think anyone's more right than the other. It's whatever you're comfortable with.
Yeah. Just to add on that a little bit, there's some efficiencies that you can create in working with your CPA to have the right financial statement format. Okay. And, you know, when people go to dental, kind of like the local dental society meetings, everybody says, hey, how you doing? Right. How are things going? And usually the response is something like, it's great. My overhead is less than 60%. That's right. Like, that's where I should be. Right. So when you kind of talk about those overhead metrics, that's like a top-down approach, right? We start and we say, hey, what's your overhead? If your overhead is 60% or less, you're where you should be, right? Kind of across the industry. If it's not, we can break that down further. We can look at staffing. 23 to 28 used to be an office staff type percentage with kind of those workforce challenges that we've touched on a couple of times. That percentage is now 25 to 32, maybe, right? Like hygienists in Wisconsin used to get paid $25 an hour out of school 8 years ago. Now they're getting paid $38 to $42 an hour, right? These change as we go, but having that kind of top-down approach can help you zero in on, is it operating expense? Is it occupancy? Is my rent too high for the amount of money that I'm producing out of this space? Is it my staff, which obviously you need them, but like, how do the metrics work as we drill down? And, you know, you can go as low as like production per chair per hygienist, right? And some people do that. And some of that's great information, right? But some of that is, we call it paralysis by analysis, where you're kind of drilling down on, you know, what is this one hygienist doing every single hour they're here, when, you know, really you could be making more of a management high level change to have a broad effect on your practice, right? And make a bigger kind of impact there. So,
yeah, I think there's different ways to look at it. I think having a good CPA, having an understanding of how to read that profit and loss is key. Because for one thing, for me, just when I was learning to read it, one thing, I do payroll biweekly.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
That means 2 months a year.
My it looks, like it looks ugly.
Right. How did that get so high? But understanding that levels out, and understanding, I think, the number of days you work. I took vacation, so we were negative for 2 months, and that's okay, because right. I need my time for myself too. But when I bust my tail the other months to make up for it, that really is, it's nice to be able to understand that, hey, this is where it is. I took 2 weeks off this month. That's how many thousands of dollars a day that this office is not producing money, and I'm still have the expense of owning the office. So being able to understand that and rationalize it for our listeners, there are some other ways you can save your money with keeping your staff. One of the things that's useful for me, I use Zen Supplies. So that's how we do our ordering, and it'll pull in whatever distributors you want to use. If you want to use Net32, you can. I don't use that. But if you want to use Patterson Shine, Dental City, it'll pull in all your distributors for the item you want, and it'll give you who's the cheapest. And I'll pick the cheapest as long as the shipping works out. But it's a great way for our assistants to do our orders. And then, I mean, I cut thousands of dollars last year off my supply budget. And that was a way I could continue to fight for my staff and give my team the raises, so I didn't lose them. So I had people to work for me. So there are some ways you can do it. Another thing, it might not be feasible for you, but I don't have a power bill. Every month I have solar panels on my office, and energy costs are rising. Nice. There's always going to be a cost for electricity. I got a nice, back in the day, I got a nice tax credit, $50,000, and the panels have already paid for themselves, and they'll pay for more because I'm not paying a power bill. But there are some things you can look at. Those are just some examples. You might have to get a little creative. I mean, with your billing, I know one thing that we are doing right now at my office is, if you haven't heard of this, a virtual assistant. They actually work overseas, but you can have them do whatever you want. You can have them call patients if you want. We're not going to have ours call patients. Ours is going to work on our insurance, calling and verifying insurance, processing estimates of prior authorizations, those kinds of things that are back end. And it's $10 an hour for them. And I don't pay payroll tax on that. So there's ways we can get creative to keep our overhead low, but also train someone. It's not that hard to type numbers into a computer and verify insurance. Like, that's not a job that needs to be face-to-face and in person to be done. So there are ways that we can utilize resources. And I felt bad when I was doing that, because it's like, man, they're getting paid $10 an hour. Is that a lot of money for them? And it actually is over there. It's a job that they want to have. So it's actually doing a benefit for someone somewhere else. And you'll be able to train them on the system that you use. And I think it's going to take a lot of load off of my team to actually be there to care with the patients and be face to face and spend more time with them rather than be punching numbers into a computer all day. So just some things. Are there any other things you've seen your clients do, I guess, with these changes to be more cost effective and keep overhead down?
You know, that's a two-folded kind of approach, right? Where it's either you got to have expenses drop or you got to make more money, right? And so take a look at what you're charging per procedure as well, right? There's a lot of reports out there. That's the other end of that piece, right? Is that if you can make a little bit more per procedure, you know, it offsets it the same as saving on an expense. So again, you made a lot of great points there on cutting expenses and where you can. And then my challenge to you guys would be is just take a look at what you're charging, you know what I mean, per code, and just make sure it's where it should be.
Yeah, I just did that. And I was surprised when I opened my office, we were in the 90th percentile, and we raised fees once a few years ago. But we just did that this year. And I'm like now down to like the 50th percentile for my zip code. And I mean, I haven't been paying attention to it. So
right
at the end of the year, we'll be punching those new numbers in. But those are some things to look at. And you can also, one of the things I did a year ago was when we were looking at how to maximize our profitability, was we hired a company to come in and look at fees and negotiate with insurance companies to get us the best deal. And as a specialist, a pediatric dentist, I get 95% of my full fee from this one company. And if I increase my fees, that they increase with that. So
perfect.
I mean, that's
95%.
95% is pretty darn good from the dental insurance company. And the big benefit is if I increase it, they increase as well. So some things to just look at if you're looking at these things. I know it's a lot to tackle, and I really appreciate both of you coming on. Is there anything else you wanted to add to, I guess, the overhead conversation?
Yeah, not to the overhead conversation, but I think as we wrap up, you know, on the topic of you bought a practice, now what, right? It's like we talked about, build your team, make a plan. But a lot of times when we look at it, it's step into the practice for those first 2 to 6 months and just, you know, take a breath, right? See what's happening. Understand everything that's happening in the office before you change something. I loved your comment, Jared, where you said, when I built my office, I wanted to understand how that worked before I passed it off, right? So kind of spending those first 6 months understanding what's going on in your office, either before you pass it off or change it. And those 6 months will go by super fast, and it'll create some stability there, because anytime there's change, people are nervous. Staff is nervous. You're nervous. The seller wants the best things for their patients and their staff. So just kind of step in there, have a plan, have some ideas, but also take those first 6 months to really understand what's going on.
Yeah, I told somebody last week, again, back to what Marshall said, there's going to be growing pains. for 6 months. Embrace the suck, right? It's gonna stink a little bit. It is.
Yeah.
But understand that, you know, this is a longer term vision and goal for yourself in a 6 month window, right?
Right.
So, you know, if you go into it knowing that, man, I'm gonna learn a lot. It's gonna be hard, but you're gonna come out of it at the other end, right? Trust your team. Trust yourself, right? You made it through dental school. You're a smart, successful person. Yep. You can do that, right? You can do this. So again, just to build on what Marsh said.
Yeah. One of my favorite quotes is from the last lecture, Randy Posh. It's experience is what you get when you didn't get what you wanted. So learning from it's, I talk a lot about wellness, but another one is just thinking that any step you take is better than just standing where you are. Cause if you step the wrong way, you're going to learn, oh, I don't want to do that again. I want to step the other way. And those are some good things to embrace and the challenge and understand you're going to have failures. You're going to have tough days. I still have them. Gosh forbid. They're not going to go away. There's still going to be challenges. There's stuff you can't control, stuff that's out of our control. Yeah. And that's going to change. And you have to figure out a way to deal with it. You may not like it, but that's the world that we live in, and you got to embrace it and be positive and keep moving forward. So again, if someone wanted to get in contact with you about either your services as a broker or as CPAs or any of the services that you offer at Edge Advise, what would be the best way to get in contact with your team?
Yeah. Best way to reach out to us, and we'll make sure that inquiry gets to the right place, is going to be curious@edgeadvise.com. And we'll give it to the appropriate party, whether it's a bean counter question for Marshall or I, or if we hand it off to the transition brokerage team, we'll make sure it gets to the right spot.
Wonderful. Well, thank you again for coming on and spending this time. These last three episodes have been wonderful. I think it'll give a lot of information out to Dennis and be a great resource for them, whether they work with you or not. So thanks again for coming on the show.
Yeah, I appreciate it, Jared.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Thank you for listening to Pediatric Dentistry from A to T. Be sure to subscribe so you never miss a future episode. For more information or to connect with Dr. Johnson, visit us online at www.pediatricdentalce.com. For more tips and tricks, follow Pediatric Dental Seminars on Facebook and Instagram. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you next time.